that Syria had kept her at it day and night. When she had run to him with her hands bleeding, he had said,
"So slow, be quicker, girl. Your enemies will give you more than scratches."
He had dabbed her wounds with Mirish fire, which burned so bad she had to bite her lip to keep from screaming. Then he sent her out after more cats. The Red Keep was full of cats. Lazy old cats dozing in the sun, cold-eyed mouses twitching their tails, quick little kittens with claws like needles, ladies' cats all combed and trusting, ragged shadows prowling the midden heaps. One by one, Arya had chased them down and snatched them up and brought them proudly to Syrio Forel. All but this one, this one-eared black devil of a tomcat.
"Oh, that's a real king of the castle right there,"
one of the gold cloaks had told her.
"Older than Sin and twice as mean. One time the king was feasting the queen's father, and that black bastard hopped onto the table and snatched a roast quail right out of Lord Tywin's fingers. Robert laughed so hard he liked to burst. You stay away from that one, child."
He had run her halfway across the castle, twice around the Tower of the Hand, across the inner bailey, through the stables, down the serpentine steps, past the small kitchen and the pig yard, and the barracks of the gold cloaks, along the base of the river wall, and up more steps, and back and forth over Traitor's Walk, and then down again, and through a gate, and around a well, and in and out of strange buildings until Arya didn't know where she was. Now at last she had him. High walls pressed close on either side, and ahead was a blank, windowless mass of stone.
"Quiet as a shadow," she repeated, sliding forward, "light as a feather."
When she was three steps away from him, the tomcat bolted. Left, then right he went, and right, then left went Arya, cutting off his escape. He hissed again and tried to dart between her legs. "Quick as a snake," she thought. Her hands closed around him. She hugged him to her chest, whirring and laughing aloud as his claws raked at the front of her leather jerkin. Ever so fast, she kissed him right between the eyes and jerked her head back an instant before his claws would have found her face. The tomcat yowled and spit. "What's he doing to that cat?" Startled, Arya dropped the cat and whirled toward the voice. The tom bounded off in the blink of an eye. At the end of the alley stood a girl with a mass of golden curls, dressed as pretty as a doll, in blue satin. Beside her was a plump little blond boy with a prancing stag sewn in pearls across the front of his doublet and a miniature sword at his belt. "Princess Marcella and Prince Tommen," Arya thought. A scepter as large as a draft horse hovered over them, and behind her two big men in crimson cloaks, Lannister house guards. "What were you doing to that cat, boy?" Marcella asked again. Sternly. To her brother she said, "He's a ragged boy, isn't he? Look at him." She giggled.
"A ragged, dirty, smelly boy," Tommen agreed.
"They don't know me," Arya realized. "They don't even know I'm a girl."
Small wonder. She was barefoot and dirty, her hair tangled from the long run through the castle, clad in a jerkin ripped by cat claws, and brown rough-spun pants hacked off above her scabby knees. You don't wear skirts or silks when you're catching cats. Quickly, she lowered her head and dropped to one knee. Maybe they wouldn't recognize her. If they did, she would never hear the end of it. Septa Mordain would be mortified, and Sansa would never speak to her again from the shame. The old fat Septa moved forward.
"Boy, how did you come here? You have no business in this part of the castle."
"You can't keep his sort out," one of the red cloaks said, "like trying to keep out rats."
"Who do you belong to, boy?" the scepter demanded. "Answer me. What's wrong with you? Are you mute?"
Arya's voice caught in her throat. If she answered, Tommen and Marcella would know her for certain.
"Godwin, bring him here," the scepter said.
The taller of the guardsmen started down the alley. Panic gripped her throat like a giant's hand. Arya could not have spoken if her life had hung on it. "Calm as still water," she mouthed silently. As Godwin reached for her, Arya moved, quick as a snake. She leaned to her left, letting his fingers brush her arm, spinning around him, smooth as summer silk. By the time he got himself turned, she was sprinting down the alley, swift as a deer. The scepter was screeching at her. Arya slid between legs as thick and white as marble columns, bounded to her feet, bowled into Prince Tommen, and hopped over him when he sat down hard and said, "Oof!" Spun away from the second guard, and then she was past them all, running full out. She heard shouts, then pounding footsteps closing behind her. She dropped and rolled. The red cloak went careening past her, stumbling. Arya sprang back to her feet. She saw a window above her, high and narrow, scarcely more than an arrow slit. Arya leapt, caught the sill, pulled herself up. She held her breath as she wriggled through, slippery as an eel. Dropping to the floor in front of a startled scrub woman, she hopped up, brushed the rushes off her clothes, and was off again, out of the door, and along a long hall, down a stair, across a hidden courtyard, around a corner, and over a wall, and through a long, narrow window into a pitch-dark cellar. The sounds grew more and more distant behind her. Arya was out of breath, and quite thoroughly lost. She was in for it now, if they had recognized her. But she didn't think they had. She moved too fast, swift as a deer. She hunkered down in the dark, against a damp stone wall, and listened for the pursuit. But the only sound was the beating of her own heart and a distant drip of water. "Quiet as a shadow," she told herself. She wondered where she was. When they had first come to King's Landing, she used to have bad dreams about getting lost in the castle. Father said the Red Keep was smaller than Winterfell, but in her dreams it had been immense, an endless stone maze with walls that seemed to shift and change behind her. She would find herself wandering down gloomy halls, past faded tapestries, descending endless circular stairs, darting through courtyards or over bridges, her shouts echoing unanswered. In some of the rooms, the red stone walls would seem to drip blood, and nowhere could she find a window. Sometimes she would hear her father's voice, but always from a long way off, and no matter how hard she ran after it, it would grow fainter and fainter until it faded to nothing, and Arya was alone in the dark. It was very dark right now, she realized. She hugged her bare knees tight against her chest and shivered. She would wait quietly and count to 10,000. By then it would be safe for her to come creeping back out and find her way home. By the time she had reached 87, the room had begun to lighten as her eyes adjusted to the blackness. Slowly, the shapes around her took on form. Huge, empty eyes stared at her, hungrily, through the gloom, and dimly she saw the jagged shadows of long teeth. She had lost the count. She closed her eyes and bit her lip and sent the fear away. When she looked again, the monsters would be gone. Would never have been. She pretended that Syria was beside her in the dark, whispering in her ear, "Calm as still water," she told herself, "strong as a bear, fierce as a wolverine." She opened her eyes again. The monsters were still there, but the fear was gone. Arya got to her feet, moving warily. The heads were all around her. She touched one, curious, wondering if it was real. Her fingertips brushed a massive jaw. It felt real enough. The bone was smooth beneath her hand, cold and hard to the touch. She ran her fingers along a tooth, black and sharp, a dagger made of darkness. It made her shiver. "It's dead," she said aloud. "It's just a skull. It can't hurt me." Yet somehow, the monster seemed to know she was there. She could feel its empty eyes watching her through the gloom, and there was something in that dim, cavernous room that did not love her. She edged away from the skull and backed into a second, larger than the first. For an instant she could feel its teeth digging into her shoulder as if it wanted a bite of her flesh. Arya whirled, felt leather catch and tear as a huge fang nipped at her jerkin, and then she was running. Another skull loomed ahead, the biggest monster of all, but Arya did not even slow. She leapt over a ridge of black teeth as tall as swords, dashed through hungry jaws, and threw herself against the door. Her hands found a heavy iron ring set in the wood, and she yanked at it. The door resisted a moment before it slowly began to swing inward, with a creak so loud Arya was certain it could be heard all through the city. She opened the door just far enough to slip through into the hallway beyond. If the room with the monsters had been dark, the hall was the blackest pit in the Seven Hells. Calm as still water, Arya told herself. But even when she gave her eyes a moment to adjust, there was nothing to see but the vague grey outline of the door she had come through. She wiggled her fingers in front of her face, felt the air move, saw nothing. She was blind. A water dancer sees with all her senses, she reminded herself. She closed her eyes and steadied her breathing. One, two, three. Drank in the quiet. Reached out with her hands. Her fingers brushed against rough, unfinished stone to her left. She followed the wall, her hands skimming along the surface, taking small gliding steps through the darkness. All halls lead somewhere. Where there is a way in, there is a way out. Fear cuts deeper than swords. Arya would not be afraid. It seemed as if she had been walking a long ways when the wall ended abruptly, and a draught of cold air blew past her cheek. Loose hairs stirred faintly against her skin. From somewhere, far below her, she heard noises. The scrape of boots, the distant sound of voices. A flickering light brushed the wall ever so faintly, and she saw that she stood at the top of a great black well, a shaft 20 feet across plunging deep into the earth. Huge stones had been set in the curving walls as steps, circling down and down, dark as the steps to hell that old Nan used to tell them of. And something was coming up out of the darkness, out of the bowels of the earth. Arya peered over the edge and felt the cold black breath on her face. Far below, she saw the light of a single torch, small as the flame of a candle. Two men she made out. Their shadows writhed against the sides of the well, tall as giants. She could hear their voices, echoing up the shaft.
"Found one bastard," one said. "The rest will come soon. A day, 2 days, a fortnight.
And when he learns the truth, what will he do?" a second voice asked in the liquid accents of the free cities.
"The guards alone know," the first voice said.
Arya could see a wisp of grey smoke drifting up off the torch, writhing like a snake as it rose.
"The fools tried to kill his son, and what's worse, they made a mummer's farce of it. He's not a man to put that aside. I warned you, the wolf and the lion will soon be at each other's throats, whether we will it or no."
"Too soon, too soon," the voice with the accent complained. "What good is war now? We are not ready. Delay."
"As well bid me stop time. You take me for a wizard."
The other chuckled. "No less." Flames licked at the cold air. The tall shadows were almost on top of her.
An instant later, the man holding the torch climbed into her sight, his companion beside him. Arya crept back, away from the well, dropped to her stomach, and flattened herself against the wall. She held her breath as the men reached the top of the steps.
"What would you have me do?"
asked the torchbearer, a stout man in leather half-cape. Even in heavy boots, his feet seemed to glide soundlessly over the ground.
A round, scarred face, and a stubble of dark beard showed under his steel cap, and he wore mail over boiled leather, and a dirk and short sword at his belt. It seemed to Arya there was something oddly familiar about him.
"If one hand can die, why not a second?" replied the man with the accent and the forked yellow beard. "You have danced the dance before, my friend."
He was no one Arya had ever seen before, she was certain of it. Grossly fat, yet he seemed to walk lightly, carrying his weight on the balls of his feet as a water dancer might. His rings glimmered in the torchlight, red, gold, and pale silver, crusted with rubies, sapphires, slitted yellow tiger eyes. Every finger wore a ring. Some had two.
"Before is not now, and this hand is not the other," the scarred man said as they stepped out into the hall.
"Still as stone," Arya told herself, "quiet as a shadow." Blinded by the blaze of their own torch, they did not see her pressed flat against the stone, only a few feet away.
"Perhaps so," the Falkbeard replied, pausing to catch his breath after the long climb. "Nonetheless, we must have time. The princess is with child. The Carl will not bestir himself until his son is born. You know how they are, these savages."
The man with the torch pushed at something. Arya heard a deep rumbling. A huge slab of rock, red in the torchlight, slid down out of the ceiling with a resounding crash that almost made her cry out. Where the entry to the well had been was nothing but stone, solid and unbroken.
"If he does not bestir himself soon, it may be too late," the stout man in the steel cap said. "This is no longer a game for two players, if ever it was. Stannis Baratheon and Lysa Arryn have fled beyond my reach, and the whispers say they are gathering swords around them. The Knight of Flowers writes Highgarden, urging his lord father to send his sister to court. The girl is a maid of 14, sweet and beautiful and tractable. And Lord Renly and Sir Loras intend that Robert should bed her, wed her, make a new queen. Littlefinger, the gods only know what game Littlefinger is playing. Yet Lord Stark's the one who troubles my sleep. He has the bastard, he has the book, and soon enough he'll have the truth. And now his wife has abducted Tyrion Lannister, thanks to Littlefinger's meddling. Lord Tywin will take that for an outrage, and Jaime has a queer affection for the imp. If the Lannisters move north, that will bring the Tullys in as well. Delay, you say? Make haste, I reply. Even the finest of jugglers cannot keep 100 balls in the air forever.
You are more than a juggler, old friend. You are a true sorcerer. All I ask is that you work your magic a while longer.
They started down the hall, in the direction Arya had come, past the room with the monsters.
What I can do, I will, the one with the torch said softly. I must have gold, and another 50 birds.
She let them get a long way ahead, then went creeping after them,
quiet as a shadow. So many!
The voices were fainter as the light dwindled ahead of her.
The ones you need are hard to find, so young, to know their letters, perhaps older, not die so easy.
No, the younger are safer. Treat them gently.
If they kept their tongues, the risk is...
Long after their voices had faded away, Arya could still see the light of the torch, a smoking star that bid her follow. Twice it seemed to disappear, but she kept on straight, and both times she found herself at the top of steep, narrow stairs, the torch glimmering far below her. She hurried after it, down and down. Once she stumbled over a rock and fell against the wall, and her hand found raw earth, supported by timbers, whereas before the tunnel had been dressed stone. She must have crept after them for miles. Finally they were gone, but there was no place to go but forward. She found the wall again and followed, blind and lost, pretending that Nymeria was padding along beside her in the darkness. At the end she was knee-deep in foul-smelling water, wishing she could dance upon it as Sirio might have, and wondering if she'd ever see light again. It was full dark when finally Arya emerged into the night air. She found herself standing at the mouth of a sewer where it emptied into the river. She stank so badly that she stripped right there, dropping her soiled clothing on the river bank as she dove into the deep black waters. She swam until she felt clean and crawled out, shivering. Some riders went past along the river road as Arya was washing her clothes, but if they saw the scrawny naked girl scrubbing her rags in the moonlight, they took no notice. She was miles from the castle, but from anywhere in King's Landing, you needed only to look up to see the Red Keep high on Aegon's Hill, so there was no danger of losing her way. Her clothes were almost dry by the time she reached the gatehouse. The portcullis was down, and the gates barred, so she turned aside to a postern door. The gold cloaks, who had the watch, sneered when she told them to let her in. "Off with you," one said. "The kitchen scraps are gone. We'll have no begging after dark." "I'm not a beggar," she said. "I live here." "I said, off with you. Do you need a clout on the ear to help your hearing?" "I want to see my father." The guards exchanged a glance. "I want to fuck the queen myself, for all the good it does me," the younger said. The older scowled. "Who's this father of yours, boy? The city rat catcher?" "The hand of the king," Arya told him. Both men laughed, but then the older one swung his fist at her, casually, as a man would swat a dog. Arya saw the blow coming even before it began. She danced back out of the way, untouched. "I'm not a boy," she spat at him. "I'm Arya Stark of Winterfell, and if you lay a hand on me, my lord father will have both your heads on spikes. If you don't believe me, fetch Jory Cassel, or Vaen Pool, from the Tower of the Hand." She put her hands on her hips. "Now, are you going to open the gate, or do you need a clout on the ear to help your hearing?" Her father was alone in the solar when Harwin and Fat Tom marched her in, an oil lamp glowing softly at his elbow. He was bent over the biggest book Arya had ever seen, a great thick tome with cracked yellow pages of crabbed script, bound between faded leather covers. But he closed it to listen to Harwin's report. His face was stern as he sent the men away with thanks. "You realize I had half my guard out searching for you?" Edard Stark said when they were alone. "Septa Mordain is beside herself with fear. She's in the Sept praying for your safe return. Arya, you know you are never to go beyond the castle gates without my leave." "I didn't go out of the gates," she blurted. "Well, I didn't mean to. I was down in the dungeons, only they turned into this tunnel. It was all dark, and I didn't have a torch or a candle to see by, so I had to follow. I couldn't go back the way I came on account of the monsters. Father, they were talking about killing you." "Not the monsters, the two men. They didn't see me. I was being still as stone and quiet as a shadow, but I heard them. They said you had a book and a bastard, and if one hand could die, why not a second?" "Is that the book? John's a bastard, I bet." "John? Arya, what are you talking about? Who said this?" "They did," she told him. "There was a fat one with wings and a forked yellow beard, and another in mail and a steel cap, and the fat one said they had to delay, but the other one told him he couldn't keep juggling, and the wolf and the lion were going to eat each other, and it was a mummer's farce." She tried to remember the rest. She hadn't quite understood everything she heard, and now it was all mixed up in her head. "The fat one said the princess was with child. The one in the steel cap, he had the torch. He said they had to hurry. I think he was a wizard. A wizard, Ned said, unsmiling. Did he have a long white beard and a tall pointed hat speckled with stars? No, it wasn't like old Nan's stories. He didn't look like a wizard, but the fat one said he was. I warn you, Arya, if you're spinning this thread of air... No, I told you. It was in the dungeons by the place with the secret wall. I was chasing cats and, well... She screwed up her face. If she admitted knocking over Prince Tommen, he would be really angry with her. Well, I went in this window. That's where I found the monsters. Monsters and wizards, her father said. It would seem you've had quite an adventure. These men you heard. You say they spoke of juggling and mummery? Yes, Arya admitted. Only, Arya, they were mummers, her father told her.